WTLC AM Indianapolis.
Indy's choice for inspiration and praise.
AM 1310, The Light.
Welcome to the second half of Afternoons with Amos. I'm Amos Brown. Glad to have you here. Let me go to a couple of calls very, very quickly before we talk with Amy Nelson of the Fair Housing Center. Let me go to Candy. Hi, Candy.
Hi, Amos. How are you?
I'm fine.
Good. You have a great show. I appreciate your show a lot. I'm off today. That's why I'm calling. My question is, there used to be a bar on Fall Creek Parkway that was bought by some man named Lacey, I think it was.
Yes.
And didn't work very long. It closed up. Whatever happened to it? Because I was concerned because this man spent a lot of his own money opening this bar up, trying to get some of his people to go to, and then it didn't work out, which disappointed me. Do you know what happened to that? Why it didn't work out?
The bar,
he moved it somewhere else. Do you have any idea what happened?
The bar, they did not move the bar someplace else. The bar closed, and then the Center Township trustee wanted to make that space into a new courtroom for the small claims court judge. The small claims court judge fought it. She felt that the small claims court should stay in the city county building that was more centralized located.
Do you know of any places that black people can go to, like a little restaurant or bar that's not necessarily deep in the hood per se? Because sometimes I want to go out with my husband somewhere, and it's like, well, where do I go that I don't have to worry about coming out and possibly being robbed or whatever? Try to get somebody credit or something, but it's hard to find a place to go where you don't feel like when you come out, you got to worry about being shot or
I would suggest our friends at Georgia Reese's. That's where we had our fundraiser for the Moselle Sanders.
Okay, I know what that said. Okay.
The other thing, it's not just a restaurant. They've got a great bar.
Okay.
In there with more of that funny-looking brown-looking liquor than I've ever seen in my life.
Okay.
So
okay.
Those of you that are into that, Georgia Reese's up on 86th Street.
Okay. One question. Why do you think, your opinion, that black bar, his bar, any bar, didn't work out in this city? What do you think happened to why it wasn't successful?
Oh, girl, that's a whole show by itself.
I went to it one time. It was very nice.
Yes, it was.
It was very nice. And you know, but I just was surprised that it didn't work out very well. It's like, well, where do you go? It's got a nice, you know, besides Georgia Reese's, which is new. Where else do I think we'll go to have dinner at? We'll just have a good time. It surprised me that it didn't work out because he really wanted to make this work. So I really felt bad for the man. He spent a lot of money opening this place up. So I feel bad about that.
All right. You made some good points. And I don't know that. That's a whole other show in itself. Anyway, I appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310. Afternoons with Amos. Amy Nelson is here with the Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana. It almost seems like every 6 months, the Fair Housing Center is pointing out some problems of lack of access to affordable housing at affordable prices, for Hoosiers. And the more we're finding out, and there's a study that came out yesterday by the United Ways of Indiana, all the United Way agencies. We're going to be talking more about it, next week. But here in this city, 25% of all households are households who the people in the adults in their work, they make more than the poverty rate, but not enough for a decent standard of living. And it's now putting a lot of pressure where 45% of all households are either working class folk that can barely make ends meet or they're in poverty. And a lot of those people are looking for quality places to live. They have Section 8 vouchers and they're trying to use those Section 8 vouchers in a place that, is not I have a lighted sign that says Roach Motel, in a great quality, and the Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana found that there's some problems in people finding quality housing that would be paid for through Section 8 vouchers. Amy, welcome.
Good afternoon.
So what led to this audit report where you sent testers out to see what was going on?
There was a variety of different factors. One was that we've actually been hearing complaints from the general public where people call us saying, what do I do? I can't find housing with my voucher. Also, some local nonprofits have also complained to us in trying to help clients and been unable to help them find what they consider safe, affordable places to live with their voucher. Mm-hmm. Then the last reason that kind of triggered it was we did some mapping in relation to another project. In a couple of those maps, which are in the report, we point out that showed that voucher holders in Marion County were overwhelmingly in the high poverty areas and also overwhelmingly in the neighborhoods of color. And we started asking, why is that? Is that people are just simply choosing to live there, or were there potentially some other factors at work?
Is the Section 8 program, was it designed to allow people without jobs to be able to go into a quality place to live, or was it designed for what the United Ways here in Indiana are calling ALICE, and I can't think of what the acronym is, I think it's income asset challenged, employed, but, you know, the income is kind of shaky. Was it designed more for those people?
Well, you raise a point, because there's actually some stigma and some stereotypes about who is the Section 8 recipient. In our county, what you led with here before we started today is that 30% of people who get Housing Choice vouchers in our county, mm-hmm, are what we call the working poor. Mm-hmm. They're employed. Mm-hmm. And then another about 40% have other sources of income, but again, need this to supplement, probably disability benefits, for instance.
Right.
It's a very small fraction that, in fact, relies solely upon so-called welfare programs, mm-hmm, for this work. So going back, I mean, when the program was first initiated back in the 1970s, it was to not only to desegregate areas, but to promote integration and provide an opportunity for people to get into neighborhoods, thereby to get out of poverty through a voucher that would help them with their rent.
So you sent testers out to all parts of the city. How'd you all get the Section 8 vouchers if you did? There's this long waiting list. Did you have like counterfeit vouchers, or you told people you had the vouchers and you'd see them later?
Without giving away too much about how we did the test, it was phone tests that we did. People posing as having a voucher and contacting complexes that we had randomly selected, mm-hmm, across the county. And this was a countywide survey. And then they made contact, sought the same sort of information any of us would get about a rental opportunity, right, but also indicated they had a voucher and, mm-hmm, asked if that would be accepted.
And you found that in 80% of the time they said no.
82% of the time countywide, they were told that their voucher would not be accepted. In the majority white areas, when we broke out those tests, we found a 90% refusal rate.
Is it, and these are people where the rent, the bulk of the rent would be paid for by the federal government, so it's not a risk to the management company or the owner of these housing units.
As we say, it's guaranteed rent. The individual pays up to 30% of their income. Sometimes their income may, in fact, be zero. So the vast majority of the rent is being paid, at least 70% is being paid through the government, so it is guaranteed rent.
Were there any instances of the same owner who owns a rental property in an area of high poverty and a rental property in an area of low poverty? The person in the low poverty said no Section 8 voucher, but the rental in the high poverty said yes.
I wouldn't be able to answer that. We randomly selected properties and tried not to test any property more than once, or we didn't test any property more than once. We also tried to pay attention to management companies, mm-hmm, and not to test the same management company.
So this is a more broader brush of management companies than concentrating on a few multiple operators.
Correct, because we wanted this to be more of a market research tool. What exactly is the market that's out there? And to make it, you know, as clean of an audit as possible in doing that.
In your report, in your recommendations, you say that perhaps the state and federal government need to, and Marion County, because Marion County has a fair housing ordinance, look at income as a possible area of anti-discrimination protection.
Correct. 12 states plus the District of Columbia and over 37 local cities and counties have added in that protection. They've said, this isn't going to keep happening in our communities. We're going to add this in, provide this additional protection. Marion County could do that. The state of Indiana could do that. As far as we're aware, there isn't any localities in all of Indiana that provides provide this protection. Yet St. Louis, Memphis, Chicago provide this protection.
239-1310. 239-1310. This afternoon's Namus. We're with Amy Nelson with the Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana. They just completed a audit, a testing report on Section 8 denial rates and found, and you probably aren't surprised by this, that most, places they tested 82% of the time, the folks said, no, we ain't taking no Section 8 voucher, which by definition then is forcing people back into the same pool, which could imply that if apartment folks have figured this out, then that may be one reason that rents are higher in some of the poorer neighborhoods of the city than they need to be. Because I think Marion County has a higher than average rent.
And it also, one of the misconceptions about renting to somebody on Section 8 is that you have to change your monthly rent, et cetera. You don't. You can set whatever monthly rent that you want. The individual has to qualify with their voucher. You know, another misconception is that we've heard pushback because there has been effort at the city-county level led by Councilor Robinson to add this source of income protection in at a local level. Mm-hmm. And those who have spoke out against it have raised, well, then I have to take everybody who comes in on Section 8. And that's inaccurate. You can still, as a housing provider, still run your background checks, your references, make sure this is going to be a good tenant who's not going to abuse your property, is going to, you know, pay rent, et cetera, with that. But you just can't deny them solely because they happen to get some of their money from the government.
Let me go to Crystal right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos and Amy. This is Crystal Ratcliffe with the NAACP president. And I was listening to your show, whereas I've been following this housing on Section 8. And anybody who does not want to rent to a minority, African Americans, those people should not be able to even be a part of the Section 8 process. So when you have people that don't want to rent to people and discriminate like that, they should not be able to even be a part of the process. So that's something that we can really work on and make sure that people even send complaint forms to the NAACP, and we'll be happy to help investigate that to assist Amy with this.
Is it Amy, are there some upcoming court cases coming into the Supreme Court that could put whether you can use race as a qualification in these kind of situations?
There are some problems coming down the road for us. The Supreme Court has not been friendly in recent years to civil rights issues. And in years past, you might have been able to make what's called the disparate impact case. For instance, in Marion County, 89% of those who receive vouchers here are African American, and 56% are single, female-headed households with kids. In years past, you could potentially make a fair housing case that by denying Section 8, you therefore would discriminate against race and families with children. Unfortunately, the U.S. Supreme Court has tried the last 2 years to take a disparate impact case. They have taken another one, the two previous cases settled before they could get to it. They've taken another one through the state of Texas, and Texas is not going to settle. It's going to go to the Supreme Court, and we are all very concerned that we're going to lose that very valuable argument that got at the still harmful form of discrimination when you can't show intentional discrimination. You know, landlords, you know, have gotten savvy who want to discriminate. They can find other ways to discriminate without saying, I don't want to rent to you because you have black disability or have kids.
All right, I appreciate it. Let me go to Ron at 239-1310. Hi there.
How are you doing, Amos?
I'm fine.
I am a landlord and your guest, I'm sorry.
Okay, it's all right.
And I had problems with most of the Section 8 people I rented to. And the last person damaged my property, and I took him to small claims court and won the judgment, but I didn't receive no penny on that. And I was wondering if Section 8 is responsible for the people that they are paying the rent for damaging people's property.
He asked a great question. When you go back to why landlords might be afraid to use Section 8, were any people tested that were individual owners, not Ron personally, but somebody like Ron, were they tested as part of this, or were these more commercial
We also tested individuals of single-family homes as well. And in the appendix in our report, we go through, we checked, the vast majority were management companies, but there were some smaller housing providers also tested. And in regards to Ron's question, you know, we get that feedback again, and this is where one of our recommendations is that there needs to be a public awareness campaign about who exactly is a Section 8 voucher. You know, there's bad apples in every thing. There's bad renters out there. And again, there's nothing to stop. Very often when I hear this, it's landlords who aren't doing reference checks, previous landlord references, to find out, is that individual going to do damage? Unfortunately, that's universal across renters. It isn't any more unique in a Section 8 voucher holder than somebody who doesn't get Section 8 as far as doing damage to their apartment. Do your background checks. That helps eliminate a number of individuals who aren't going to take good care of your property.
But is it also where HUD and Section 8 need to do some due diligence? So if somebody that was one of their voucher holders gets a judgment, skips, that, you know, the Section 8 could do some assistance, HUD could do some assistance, particularly with an individual entrepreneur, not a big company, somebody that's just trying to make extra money renting out a property they own.
That would probably be more of a question for IHA or for Bud Myers to answer as to what would the repercussions of that. Certainly under the Section 8 program, that individual is not going to continue to be eligible for Section 8 while they have that pending claim out there.
All right. Good point, Ron. Let me go to Bobby at 239-1310. Hi there. Yes.
I'm just curious, what is the average time for a person to be on Section 8? And if it's long term, how come they can't come out with a plan for them to buy that house, and then that would get them off of Section 8?
That's a great question, because I think to be on Section 8, is there a time limit? You're only there like for 2 years, 5 years, forever?
No, and actually the IHA here in town, as well as some other major housing authorities across our state and the country, do offer a home ownership plan. There's not enough opportunities for individuals to take advantage of that, and to where if they can find affordable housing, they're basically can be paying up on a mortgage instead to eventually get that house. You know, we go back to the goal of the Section 8 program is to get people out of poverty. And by getting them into neighborhoods of their choice where they have better access to schools, jobs, transportation, then you're helping them eventually get off that Section 8 voucher because they're increasing their opportunities. But what we're suggesting in our report is that if people are driven back into the same areas, the high poverty areas, they're not getting the opportunity to get out of poverty.
All right, good points. Let me go to Dave right quick, then we'll take a break at 239-1310. Hi there.
Thanks for taking the call, Amos.
Yeah.
I was in the rental business for about 34 years. And I used to try to get Section 8 people, but it was like pulling teeth down there to get them to move. And you used to be able to get a list of people that were available, that had the voucher, and were eligible for it. And you could call them as a landlord and ask them if they're interested, tell them where the property was, if they'd like to come over and take a look at it. And then they got to the point where they wouldn't do that anymore. And you had to wait for the person who had the voucher to give you a call, even though you had your property on the list as properties available for Section 8 renters. And I just found that it was just, they weren't very friendly to landlords. And that was a real hang up with me. I finally had to quit trying with them anymore. They did have a great program. It was called the Mod Rehab Program, where you put your property up for 15 years on the contract, and they came in and inspected and tell you what they wanted to have done, and you do it. You provide your own financing, and they added that back into the rent, which was a great program. The only big drawback on it was the amount of rent increase you would get on a yearly basis was only about 1 or 2%, but you're guaranteed your money. That's the part I don't understand about some people. A bird in the hand is worth more than two in the bush. So this day and age with collecting your rent, it can be pretty difficult to do. I got out of the rental business about 7 or 8 years ago. So, you know, I don't know how bad it is now, but,
getting a rent's a real good thing, and I can't imagine people that are in the rental business that have guaranteed 80, 90, 100% of the rent coming in, not anxious to do it. There's, you know, there has to be something that's it just not conducive for the landlords to get on the program.
All right, good points, Dave. I appreciate it. We'll take a break. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's names. We'll be back with Amy Nelson of the Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana. When we come back, one of the questions I'm going to ask her is, okay, if we can't use race and income as a possibility, can we use geographic disparity? In other words, if there are housing units that rent for a certain amount in certain parts of the city that aren't being used, but something similar in other parts of the city are, you can say, aha, wait a minute now, there's some geographic disparity. We want to be able to have people live in all parts of the city. Therefore, something's wrong. That sounds like that. John Roberts might like that at the Supreme Court. It's Afternoons with Amos after these.
Hello, I'm Maxine Bryan, and you're listening to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310 and the Light.
Hey, we're back with 239-1310. We're Amy Nelson, Fair Housing Center. Now, they're building all this stuff in downtown. They're building all this stuff in Broad Ripple. Some tax dollars are involved, and I thought if Uncle's money was involved, that the developer had to set aside a few units for Uncle for the use of poor or low and moderate income households. But I gather they're just building stuff on Mass Avenue for gazillionaires.
Mr. Brown, you get a gold star for raising a very excellent point. The city just a couple weeks ago released their analysis of impediments to fair housing along with their consolidated plan. You can find it online, or we have links to it.
Under DMV. They actually released DMV. Something. Well, you know, they don't want me to know anything about this.
So this is their draft plan that the public can comment on. One of the things they note in the plan, they do note that they are concerned about affordable housing options.
No, really?
They must have
heard there's a mayor's election coming.
The Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana, you will see our comments attached to the back of this draft. And we raised the point, with so much being built, let's look at just our downtown area. New high-rises coming that we all want to have more housing options, but how many of them have mixed income? And other than a couple that I'm aware of, I'm not hearing that they have that mixed income requirement. If federal funds are being used, they have to do something called affirmatively furthering fair housing, meaning they have to address poverty and promote integration. And in order to do that, you do that through mixed income housing.
Is there concern with this, with a lot of the new construction outside of downtown are for senior citizens? Is there a concern that some of these senior citizens projects that are being done will end up resegregating senior citizens in inner city neighborhoods, and these developments out in the townships would not be racially integrated?
In fair housing, we certainly promote, you know, an individual's right to choose where they want to live.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of, honestly, any sort of segregated housing. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of housing just for those with disabilities. Just, I believe integration is the best way to go.
Of everything.
But currently, it's legal to have mm-hmm. senior housing. It's legal to have disability-only housing, you know, et cetera, in that. And where those projects are being built is, you know, our concern is that they're being built in the same areas where there are other projects that are like them, rather than in areas where those projects haven't been built before that would then integrate those neighborhoods in a better way.
Should we be concerned that in New York City there's this outrageousness of apartments being built with federal funds, and then they set aside a certain number of units for low and moderate income, but those units are in one section of the building and you have to enter by a separate entrance, and all the people paying through the nose go through another separate entrance?
Yeah, what they call the poor door.
Is that similar to what they did with Luger Towers and Barton, where they put some fancy new apartments around where the older buildings were, and when you drive by you can't see the older buildings because they're surrounded by the newer buildings?
In that particular building, I think they do have access to both towers on that one, so we don't have the poor door issue there. Milliken is one of the rare properties that's been built in the last few years, though, that was mixed income and in an area where there needed to be affordable housing. So that's certainly a positive for the city. We just wish there was more of them with the mixed income in the areas where there are the jobs, where there's the transportation options, you know, where people have health care and school options.
Let me go to Sylvia, 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello, Amos.
How are you?
Your guest.
Yeah.
First of all, I'd like to say happy Veterans Day to all the vets and thank them all for serving our country and protecting us. But my question is, I used to be on Section 8 years ago, say in the late 80s, and I wrote a letter and gave my resignation notice of turning it in because I had gotten financially able to support and get my own housing. But I was wondering, in any event, could I reapply for Section 8 because I am a disabled a black woman, and I am a, I'm on disability and all. But I wanted to know if I were to reapply, could they reopen my case or do I have to apply all over again?
You probably would have to start from scratch given that it's been that long. Because if you, if you got out in the 80s, that's 30 years ago.
Yes.
That's a long.
I like to leave my name and number off the air where she could call me and, I'll finish explaining my, my situation to her if I may, please.
All right, if Amy doesn't mind, hold on, and Drew, Sylvia, we'll get your information, and we'll pass that on to Amy. That will allow me to talk 239-1310 to Anonymous. Hi there.
Hello?
How are you? You're on the air. What's up?
Oh, okay. Well, I said I had a comment, but it's kind of both. To your guests, and happy Veterans Day to our guests. I was wondering, because I used to have, well, actually it was my mom. She was receiving Section 8 in the early 2000s, and it was a lot of landlords, all different races of landlords running down there trying to get their houses on Section 8 in the downturn in the housing, you know, in the housing market. So I was wondering if, and I know it's all about housing, but if we have any, you know, will Section 8 allow those that are now saying, well, we don't want Section 8, in the event something happens like this with the economy again, will they allow those people back that are saying, no, we don't want it, you know, with the upturn?
That's a great question.
Anyone can begin accepting Section 8 by going through the process within our county IHA. As long, you know, their housing has to be up to code. And at any point, somebody can begin accepting Section 8. We encourage it. We want, you know, to see that. The previous caller, you know, when she talked about the concern about trying to get back on Section 8, that is a concern. Recent, IHA has had their waiting list closed. It was closed for almost a decade until in the last few weeks they opened it up and they received over 45,000 applications for what will end up being 1,000 vouchers. They're going to take 6,000 people, my understanding, to be put on a wait list that then they will see who qualifies to potentially get 1,000 vouchers. You know, Mr. Brown, how telling is that? Over 45,000 people in our community applied in need of housing assistance. What is that telling us right there?
That's telling us we got a problem. Is this the issue of housing? Is this an issue that should be on, since we're going to have an open mayor's race, where we're not dealing with an incumbent, we're dealing with, goodness knows, it might be 500 people running for mayor before this thing is all over with. Is housing one of the issues that needs to be put on the plate in the discussion, for the next mayor, for the mayoral candidates to address?
I would love to see it. When we look out, you know, where you live determines so much about you. Post-foreclosure crisis, study after study is showing it affects your very health. Certainly your access to, for your kids getting into quality schools to help get out of poverty. Whether or not you have, you're in a food desert, whether or not you're going to have access to fresh vegetables and fruit, all of that is impacted by where you live. And here in Marion County, certainly we've been debating here for how many years, what are we going to do with all the vacant and abandoned foreclosures that used to have families in them, but now have been sitting vacant for how long, and what are we going to do about them? You know, the hardest hit funds, you know, that's been a little bit of a concern. We are actually the lowest state when it comes to disbursement of our hardest hit funds to actual homeowners who are in danger of foreclosure. That's a problem. So I would love to see housing be part of the next mayoral, debate.
Let me go back to the phones in Judy. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me go back. Caller, you still there? I think we settled that. Let me go to Judy. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I got a question to her, about Section 8. I got a friend that was my neighbor when I lived in, the apartment. And she said, oh, Judy, you could, get on Section 8. And see, we are in a low income. And, so what they did, they put her in an apartment next door and allow her to be on Section 8.
And so they said what?
No, they didn't.
I'm sorry?
She told me that, she's thinking about getting on Section 8.
So you're trying to get on Section 8?
No, my neighbor.
They're trying to get on Section 8.
Yeah, she was telling me about getting on Section 8.
Well, if he did not be
no,
one
listen,
of the...
Just listen. So what she ended up doing is getting on Section 8.
Okay.
And they, what they did was move her right next door to where she was at in a low income. So I'm thinking, no, I don't want to get in trouble, you know, to apply, you know.
She might have been in what's called a project-based Section 8, which it's tied to the unit, rather than an actual Section 8 voucher. There's different Section 8 programs, you know, there. And that, you know, that's another thing. In the analysis of impediments to fair housing that was released, you know, by the city, you know, they talked about, again, the lack of those affordable housing options. And, again, in our community, those who are applying for Section 8 get on Section 8. Typically, they're well below low income. They're at the lower 30 percentile. I mean, it's not borderline. That's the bulk. It's the majority of people who are being helped are individuals who are at significant risk of homelessness.
Yeah, like me.
And
Amos know about it.
Okay.
But, so I don't know if this is open, inquiry or not, Amos.
I know they just added 40 some odd thousand names, or they're trying to add 6,000 names to a waiting list for 1,000 vouchers. And they brought, you know, if people weren't a part of that lottery that ended just before the election, you know, they'll probably have to wait another 10 years.
Well, what I'm saying is she was in a low income, but they allowed her to move next door to where she lived and put her on Section 8.
Well, that, you'd have to ask the Section 8 people. That one I can't explain. Is that one of the problems, Amy, and I appreciate the call anonymous, that people hear some things, some stories of where Section 8 didn't follow completely their rules, and so people say, hey, the rules are, you know, somebody, there are people that can skate and scam the system.
Again, I see all kinds of things come through our office, and scammers come in all shapes and forms. Yeah. And
equal opportunity
there. You know, we could really have a great debate about the scamming that occurred with JP Morgan and all of them as far as the foreclosure crisis. You know, there's been some recent studies. One of the things that gets raised, again, as we're going forward before the City County Council, is there, you know, have been some comments outside of the commission hearing about, you know, if I rent to Section 8, then does that mean crime is going to go up and things like that. And there's been recent studies that have followed Section 8 recipients for decades showing there is no impact upon crime. Criminals come in all shapes and forms, and it isn't one particular demographic in which that occurs.
Got an email at praiseindy.com. Among the things that it says, a black American raised in the Deep South, I'm familiar with discrimination and stereotypes, and I do not believe that the denial of Section 8 recipients is discrimination. The writer continues, a large percentage of Section 8 recipients do not fall in the category of people striving to do better. I think the issue is with people who have made a lifestyle out of Section 8 and other government assistance programs. I lived in a very nice apartment complex in Indianapolis before the arrival of Section 8 recipients. Once the management started accepting Section 8, kids were running around tearing up everything. They broke the side mirror on my brand new car. They scratched and dinged my car numerous times. They tore up entry doors and we caught them stealing stuff, had to call the police. I just believe that saying if you work for something, you'll appreciate it. I believe the opposite is true. If you don't work for something, then you won't appreciate it. I do not want to live in an apartment complex that accepts Section 8. If I live in one that begins accepting it, then I'll be looking for my next home.
That sounds like a management problem. The manager at that property has authority over who continues residing there and whether or not somebody abides by the rules. Just because somebody gets Section 8 doesn't mean that they don't have to abide by the same rules as anybody else living there. If people are doing damage, they aren't taking care of their guests, whatever, they could be issued lease violations like any other resident. So in that description that was given there, that sounds like a manager who wasn't enforcing the rules and policies at the complex correctly.
Is that one of the reasons that we see deteriorating properties? If we look at the Phoenix apartments, a strong argument that can be made was because they had absentee landlords, ineffective local management, lack of hands-on, that caused the property to deteriorate, not necessarily the people that were in it.
Absolutely. Or it's now been bought or is managed by an out-of-state firm. We see that very often as well, who doesn't give the attention or proper oversight to local management or provide them the support they need to do what they need to do. Management, just because somebody gets a Section 8 voucher doesn't mean you can't do landlord reference checks, doesn't mean you can't issue lease violations, etc. And I hear, you know, all these hypotheticals or these horror stories about these different things that happening. I hear it with just the general renting public, though, too.
Is it the same as a dorm? If a college has a dorm and the dorm doesn't have dorm assistance and oversight, the students will tear the dorm up.
Absolutely.
In Harvard, much less Ball State or Swoboda State. If people want more information about the Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana, how do they find out about your programs and your reports?
www.fhcci.org. Please come listen into the County Commission meeting tonight. We're going to be debating this issue.
Uh-oh. The County Commission.
The Rules and Public Policy Committee. Tonight.
Oh, that's the same meeting they're having to preschool
and the homeless proposal as well. Lots can be busy agenda tonight.
Oh, that sounds like that. Well, I'm going to be watching Channel 16 tonight. And if you want more, also the Fair Housing Center has a phone, 644-0673, 644-0673, or FHCCI.org. Still C's are getting me. FHCCI.org. Amy Nelson, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank
Glad
you.
To have you.